For years, it's been commonly understood that all women over 40 should get a mammogram every year, or at least every 2 years. Late last year, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force shocked the medical establishment and women's health advocates with a controversial report suggesting that all these mammograms might not be such a good idea. The task force issued new guidelines saying that women 40 to 49 should talk to their doctors and decide whether screening mammograms are appropriate for them. The task force also said that women over 74 do not benefit significantly from the procedure. The new advice has split the medical community, with some physicians insisting that it's only meant to save insurance companies money, while others feel it's based on solid science and meant to minimize risks such as anxiety over minor abnormalities and overexposure to radiation. Barbara Brenner is the founder and executive director of Breast Cancer Action and a tireless activist for empowering women dealing with breast cancer. Erin Mathewson interviewed Barbara about her somewhat surprising response to the new mammography guidelines. Erin began by asking Barbara how she became a breast cancer activist.
I got involved in breast cancer, as too many people do, when I was diagnosed for the first time in 1993 at the age of 41. And I decided I wanted to do something about women's health.
Was it through a mammogram that you were able to detect the breast cancer?
No, and that's actually important for people to know. The routine then, back in the early 90s, was that people should have what's called a baseline, which just means first, at the age of 35. And then annually or every other year after 40. And so I had a lot of mammograms. I had a mammogram in February of the year I was diagnosed in September that had not shown the cancer. So once you've had breast cancer, if you have a lumpectomy, they start doing a mammogram every 6 months on the affected side and once a year on the other side. So I was having mammograms on that breast cancer left side of my left breast every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1996, again, I found the breast cancer the mammogram did not. This is not a perfect technology. It never has been, and unfortunately, it never will be. But that has gotten lost in all the messaging about early detection.
And Barbara, for any of our listeners who have never gotten a mammogram, what exactly is that like?
Oh, well, a mammogram is an X-ray. And the way they take this X-ray is they have you get very close to a machine and put your breast on a plate, and then they drop another plate to press the breast against that plate, and they take an X-ray of it. And then they have you go to the other side, and they do the same thing. They, of course, step out of the room while they're taking the picture because it's radiation, but nobody ever wants to talk about that. So that's what it is.
Could you tell us, what are the new guidelines, and how do they differ from the old ones?
Yeah, well, keep in mind that these guidelines, which are issued by the U.S. Prevention Services Task Force, are actually guidelines issued to clinicians, to doctors. They weren't really meant for the general public, though the general public certainly got a hold of them. And these were issued in November 2009, a revision of guidelines that were issued first in 2002. And the 2002 guidelines said we should be routinely screening with mammograms women 40 to 49 who are at normal risk. They're not at elevated risk for breast cancer. Just so keep in mind that a screening mammogram is something given to an apparently healthy woman for the purpose of figuring out whether there's cancer present. If you have a lump in your breast or pain in your breast, that's not a screening mammogram. That's something else. But if you're a perfectly healthy person, your doctor says, go get your regular checkup, have your mammogram, that's the screening mammogram. So the 2002 guidelines said it's okay to do routine screening 40, 49 every other year. And postmenopausally, which the marker is 50, but it really means postmenopausally, every year for women 50 then to 70. The new guidelines, based on new evidence, say if you're at normal risk for breast cancer, not at elevated risk, and you're 40 to 49, whether you have a mammogram should be a discussion you have with your doctor about how you feel about risk and making sure that you know both the benefits and the harms from this procedure. So that's one thing they said. The second thing they say is for women 50 now to 75, because there's more evidence in the 70-75 group now, women should have mammograms every 2 years, again, if you're at normal risk, every 2 years, not every year. Those are what the guidelines say about mammography and how they changed since 2002.
And so how did both the public and the kind of activist community and even doctors respond to the new guidelines?
Well, in a way, you would have thought that we had told people they could not have apple pie for dessert.
Wow.
So the reaction was different depending on who you talk to. There were many people furious about these guidelines. Some of them were women diagnosed by mammograms in their 40s. Some of them were people who believed that this was part of rationing health care and we were doing it on women's backs. And some of them were people who just believed mammograms are the greatest thing and we should keep doing them. And there were other people who said, you know, like Breast Cancer Action has been saying for years, there is not good evidence that routinely screening women in their 40s who are not at elevated risk improves any outcome. And so why will we expose people all the harms associated with this technology when the benefits are not accruing to that population? So we were not surprised. We were actually pleased that somebody said what we've been saying for years. So most of the heat around these mammogram guidelines has been around the population of women 40 to 49. Really, people are so passionate about this. If they would put their passion into finding something better, we'd be better off. And they made one other recommendation that has created quite a lot of controversy, at least within breast cancer, which is the task force said there is not good evidence that teaching women breast self exam is helpful, so we should stop teaching it.
So the self-exam where you kind of, you feel your breast, you feel if there's a lump, that's
right.
Not helpful.
Yes, well, there are guidelines about what a good breast self-exam is. And by now, we're talking about, we need to be very clear what we're talking about. If we're saying to women, this routine breast self-exam done every month in precisely this way may not help you, that's correct. But if we take that to mean, don't know your breasts, that's a bad message. Because in at least a third of cases, breast cancer is found by women checking themselves.
I wanted to go back to something you said. You talked about the harm that could be done by mammograms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned that, you know, they may not actually detect the cancer. What other harms are associated with mammograms?
Well, that harm of not actually detecting something is a harm because it's what's called a false negative. Say you have breast cancer and the mammogram doesn't find it, and you go merrily along thinking you're fine when you're not, and then we may find the cancer too late to do anything about it. So that's a false negative problem. And almost every way we have of detecting breast cancer has some of these limitations. The other problem is what's called a false positive, where the mammogram shows something. You can't tell looking at the x-ray, which is what the mammogram is, you can't tell looking at that x-ray whether what is this cancer, so you have to do a biopsy. You have to cut tissue. For all investment in cancer, the only way to diagnose breast cancer or any cancer now is to look at tissue or cells under a microscope. So you have to take tissue out, and that's a biopsy. And biopsies have consequences. They're scarring. They're emotionally very difficult for a lot of people. There's some indication that in some cases they may increase your risk of breast cancer later. So it's a medical intervention. There's anesthesia involved. There are a lot of things that go on when you have surgery. So the false positive is a problem. The other big problem with mammography that other detection methods don't share is that it's radiation-based. And the guidelines were the first documents I have ever seen published in a respectable journal where somebody actually talked about the risk of cumulative exposure to radiation. Radiation accumulates in the body. You never get rid of it. Not everybody exposed to radiation over time gets cancer, but we know that radiation is a carcinogen. It causes cancer. And we also know that it's biggest impact is on still developing tissue. So if you're a very young woman, up to 25 at least, for many women, you still have developing breast tissue. So mammograms younger than that is really a scary proposition, because you're not getting one mammogram, you're getting how many over a lifetime. And that's not the only radiation exposure you get. You have other x-rays. I mean...
Wow.
And those are risks you might want to take, depending on how you evaluate risk, what your risk is really, as opposed to what you imagine your risk to be, and how you feel about balancing benefits and harms. But we have talked about mammography in this country as if there is never a downside. And there has never been a medical intervention that doesn't have a downside. Everything is about choices. So our position is, treat people like they're adults, give them the information, and let them make an informed choice.
You know, you said that you found out that you had breast cancer not through a mammogram. How did you find out?
Well, I was then doing, because remember, this is 15 years ago.
Yes.
I was trained how to do breast self-exam, and I was doing it. And I found two lumps, two changes in breast tissue that I took to the attention of my doctor. And the doctor pursued it by taking tissue out and looking at it. But the mammograms I had, couldn't see it.
Now that we have these new guidelines, how does that affect me? If, say, I want to get a mammogram anyway at 40, is anyone going to stop me?
If you're 40 and you want to get a mammogram, you should be able to get one, assuming you have health care coverage. And there are no government-funded screening programs that have money to screen women younger than 50. That's a budget problem. That's not because of these guidelines. And there are a lot of people trying to fix that. But basically, if you, and this is a big if you have access to health care and you want a mammogram at 40, you can get one. But you should do it with your eyes open.
We will still be covered for mammograms at 40, or are they also saying, you know, we're only going to cover mammograms that you get at 50?
Oh, this task force, which is not actually, it's not a government organization. It's a group of experts appointed by the government to look at evidence. And they are not allowed to consider costs, and they didn't. And they said nothing about insurance. So two things got reported coming out of these recommendations that were wrong. One was the report that women between 40 and 49 cannot get mammograms, wrong, and insurance won't cover them, wrong. Insurance is going to cover mammograms, and nobody's changing. If you want to know what's really going on, contact an organization you trust.
Now, Barbara, I've heard that several organizations like the American Cancer Society do not endorse these new guidelines. How will that impact this and women's health?
I think that, well, the American Cancer Society is one. Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation is another. Both of those organizations have been part of what, over the last now 30 years, has been an oversimplification of the message about mammography screening. And their unwillingness to change their message now is not going to help. Because having contributed to the misunderstanding, they have an obligation, in our view, to correct it. But at the ACS, American Cancer Society, I think they're just afraid of confusing people. And I know that's true at the Komen Foundation because I've heard their CEO talk about it. But they understand that we have oversold mammography. There's one other harm that's coming that I should mention that's really driving a lot of the guidelines in the first place, which is what they call overdiagnosis and we call overtreatment. This is a situation where, because mammograms can find things that your fingers can't, or your doctor's fingers can't, or your nurse practitioner's fingers can't, they're finding things before they're life-threatening in many cases. Some of those things they find will never be life-threatening because they're either very slow-growing or they've never shown the capacity to spread beyond their breasts. Breast cancer in your breast cannot kill you. It's when it spreads to life-sustaining organs or bone. And so we try to get breast cancer before it leaves the breast, right? That's why we do surgery. But if we're finding breast cancers that will never be life-threatening, and we're finding more of them because we do so much screening, and we can't tell whether your particular cancer will, 5 years from now, start to grow, we give everybody treatment. But a lot of those people don't need that treatment and never did. I've had the whole nine yards. I haven't had hormones. I've had chemotherapy. I've had surgery. I have had radiation. I can assure you, if you don't need these treatments, you don't want them. But the American Cancer Society understands this. The task force understands this. We are getting into a situation where we are over-diagnosing a condition that will lead to treating people for things they don't need. And instead of fighting about giving more mammograms, we should put our energy into getting the science to distinguish for us who needs treatment from who doesn't.
Barbara, I'm 27. And I have an aunt who had breast cancer and another who had colon cancer. It's the best thing that I can do just to be aware of my body and go to my doctor when I notice a change, or is there anything else I can do?
So family history matters to risk. And, you know, there are a lot of things we don't know about risk, which is why this gets a little confusing for people. But there are things we do know, and family history matters. It matters most if your family history is of a first or second degree relative, a parent, a sister, an aunt, or an uncle, who had early onset disease, premenopausal. And what I would say to someone in your situation is, if you have health insurance, that you might want to consult with a genetics counselor to actually have somebody help you do a medical family tree where you can, she or he can look with you at what the pattern of cancer is in your history and figure out whether it puts you at higher risk. It might not. I think women in their 20s should certainly check themselves. And if you think you have an increased risk because of your family history or for something about your personal history, I would talk to my doctor about that.
Among my friends, none of us are talking about mammograms. I don't even know if many of us knew about these new guidelines.
Well, that's good. Really, that's good, because hopefully by the time you're 40, we'll have some better way of approaching this. I've been in the breast cancer movement since my diagnosis in 1993, and I sort of hoped at some point we'd get to talking about something besides mammography.
Where would you like to see the movement go?
Oh, I would like to see the movement go in a couple of directions. I would like to see the movement bring all of its passion about mammography into finding, helping us push for answers to who needs treatment and who doesn't. That's on one side of the equation. We also need way better treatments for people who have very aggressive disease, and people don't understand this. Early detection only matters for some people. If you can have a breast cancer that's really tiny in physical size, but very aggressive in biology, and no matter how early we find it, our treatments aren't good enough. It's going to kill you. And the third thing I would like to see this movement do is actually push for some better understanding of what's causing all this breast cancer environmentally. And there's some organizations like us who are doing that and some who don't pay attention to it. And there's another piece that's coming up increasingly frequently. We talk about it as cancer disparities. White women have more breast cancer, but if you're African American, you're more likely to get it younger and more likely to die. The rate is going up fastest in Latinas. Those are differences. We think we ought to start looking at the social, economic, historical, and racial context in which all of those differences happen. It's not enough to say these people are genetically different, because that's not what's happening. We're actually more genetically alike than we are different.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what's going on in the African-American communities? What is it about the context, historical, racial, economic, in which these women live that may be explaining the difference in outcomes? We don't want to talk about disparities. We want to talk about inequities. And I think if we continue to focus on disparities, we will continue to have a medical conversation This is a social problem.
Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
We've gotten to a point in this country where people don't know how to engage to create change. They think somebody else will do it. But every change that's happened in breast cancer has been because women and the men who care about them have demanded it. If you want something to change, get involved. Because, you know, it's not going to happen if you don't want it to happen. Just not.
Erin Mathewson spoke with Barbara Brenner, Executive Director of Breast Cancer Action. BCA is a grassroots survivor-led organization whose mission says, "We are not afraid to examine all sides of all issues. We cannot be bought. We tell the truth about what we discover. We recognize that structural changes in society are needed to accomplish our mission." The San Francisco-based organization provides information to anyone who needs it via newsletters, websites, and a toll-free number, and they also organize people to do something besides worry. They advocate for policy changes intended to eliminate the causes of breast cancer and assure universal access to quality health care. You can get more information about this groundbreaking organization at their website, which is bcaction.org. Their toll-free hotline is 877-278-6722.
I want myself for the blackness in my chest. The razors in my heart would never rest. It's funny how you find just what you seek. Love is what you
Magazine on listener-sponsored KPFA 94.1 FM. I'm Kate Raphael. Message to Myself is on the album Awakening, which Melissa Etheridge released after her own bout with breast cancer. Friends gave it to me when I was undergoing chemotherapy a couple of years ago, and I must have listened to that song 30 times.